We had contemplated reducing the reimbursement amounts to each court, and we would do it in a way that would be kind of on an allocation basis. Everybody would know how much money would be available to them, and they would adjust their services accordingly. As we started looking into this further, it was brought forward that the fund condition, the fund balance of the trial court trust fund could absorb the shortage in funding in this particular account. As a result, there were no reductions that were applied to the different courts. We basically maintained the status quo, made the difference up from the trial court trust fund balance. Fast forward, we're now in a situation where the fund condition of the trial court trust fund is not healthy as a result of losses in revenues and such. And we're looking at an $11 million shortfall this coming year. This past week, as Katrail mentioned, we did convene, and at that time, we were informed that the fund condition of the trial court trust fund was not going to be able to absorb the reduction next year as well as the year afterward. So we were going to assemble a methodology that would recognize workload in the different courts so that we can apply some sort of formula that informed courts that the funds that are were traditionally available would not be available, and that those courts would have to reduce services to align their service level with the budget level. And that's what is going to necessitate a bit of time. As I look at this particular chart, I want to make sure that the fund balance, which is not available, which we were under the impression of, it continues to not be available as a offset to the reduction, because we're going to have to make some very, very difficult decisions about reducing service levels of interpreters for all of the courts. So want to make sure that if in fact the position of this body is to reduce expenses in the interpreters fund, and that we would then, the subcommittee would then formulate recommendations to go forward, would be appropriate. And so maybe a very brief conversation or discussion about the fund balance condition and whether or not it can sustain these shortfalls, just to reinforce it, helps us move forward with the appropriate recommendations to this body about how to deal with the shortfall in funding. Did I confuse things or did I assist?
I think you assisted, but if there's questions to clarify the assistance, that now's the time. Well, I don't hear any, and I don't know if that's, I would assume it's because David and Cottrell did such a great job setting it out. If it's fatigue, set your fatigue aside. If you have questions, let us know. So we're dealing now with the conclusion of the recommendations in action item 5, and on top of that, action item 6, which the recommendations are set forth at page 62 of 111. So do
right.
do the two play well together, David? If we take action item 6 first and approve A and B theoretically, would that then change the ultimate recommendations for action item 5, the remaining recommendations?
It may. So here's the reason why I'm asking the question. On line 28, on chart that is on page 61, 5C, there's a ending fund balance of $56.9 million. $28 million is restricted, it looks like. I want to make sure that that money, and previously we had discussed the fact that we were not going to drop that fund balance lower than a specific number. So if in fact that is the threshold that we have to maintain for the fund balance, then absolutely we can move forward with the budget that has been included on these documents.
So
I have a
with
question.
that, go ahead, Kim.
I'm not sure. This
Oh, I'm sorry,
is Jill
Jessica Bannon.
Bannon.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
On what's page 62 of mine, I think my pagination is different than some of them. The recommendations for FMS about kickback for the interpreter fund, the B recommendation is inform courts that reductions are imminent due to the state's economic downturn and courts should prepare for a reduction in funding. Are you saying that what's imminent is we're going to have to start paying, we're not going to get full reimbursement, or are you saying we're going to have to cut interpreters?
Well, it's almost both. So here's what happens. In the materials, there is a description of services regarding interpreters that are extended beyond the mandated areas, you know, juvenile, criminal, et cetera. And they've identified in those materials kind of priorities. Up until this point, courts that provided interpreters in those areas were fully reimbursed for the cost. The condition of the interpreters fund is such that it may not be sustainable. So in order for courts to have a balanced budget, they either reduce the interpreters in those areas or cover the difference with their general court budgets. I don't know that that's necessarily a course of action that courts would jump to because the funds are so short for, as we just talked about earlier today. So the choices are reduce services or cover the difference, essentially.
Okay,
does that answer your question,
you.
Judge Fannin?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
David, Judge Thompson, or Judge Conklin, Judge Thompson. David, following up on a question, on statements you just had, reimbursement has happened on a application basis by the trial courts. Is that correct?
It's been done on a reimbursement basis.
Okay.
So there's
so
never
knowing
been
that
a,
there's a knowing that there is such a shortfall, would it be appropriate to at least moving forward until the subcommittee meets to reduce reimbursements to juvenile, criminal, those mandated, so that we don't eat up into that fund from non-mandated processes with courts that are utilizing it, or tell courts they're not going to be reimbursed for those until we have a further analysis?
Right. So if the action of this body is to reduce the budget for the interpreter services, then the appropriate next step would be to inform courts that the fund condition is such that it cannot sustain the current level of reimbursements that are taking place, and courts need to be prepared to reduce services in conjunction with reductions that are going to be applied to the different courts. So I think it's important for courts to at least receive that information at the beginning of the budget year so changes can be implemented accordingly. But I want to make sure that that is the will of this body, because if somebody decides that we're going to drain the fund balance of the trial court trust fund to make up that difference, then it's going to be the status quo. And that is not the recommendation that I think we've talked about within the subcommittee. But I want to at least be sure that the path that we're plotting forward with is that we're not going to make up the difference out of the trust fund balance.
There's a lot goes on here too. Zlatko, I don't know if you want to add anything on that, but that's my understanding is that shortfall is not going to come from there because it can't.
No, thank you, Judge and David. Yes, the concern is that even at a $28 million fund balance level, at the $17 million gap, that would be bringing the trial court trust fund balance down to effectively, you know, a really unreasonable and unmanageable level given the volatility of revenues. And while we've had a room in the past, the gaps have been relatively smaller than this. We feel like this is the more prudent fiscal approach. But again, you know, that we look to the committee to come to that conclusion by looking at the numbers of the fund condition statement.
So with that said, Judge Conklin, if the It is, if the fund balance is at the very bottom that we're recommending, then we would obviously support the budget as expressed or presented. And under this particular item, we would move forward with the recommendation of FMS to develop a allocation model to all of the courts that align with the shortfall in funding. So it would be an $11 million funding gap, I think, is the number. $17 million, thank you. $17 million budget gap. And I assure you, that is going to be a very painful reduction in services across the board. So that's why it's important for us to move forward with under that premise. Based on that, if that's what everybody wants to do, then certainly taking up this particular item for consideration to approve seems appropriate and answers the questions that I had.
Any questions?
This is Kim.
Go ahead.
One thing, with FMS being going to probably be charged with coming up with a methodology on the overexpended funds for interpreter, just throw out that there needs to be some realization that you've got different parts of the state that have different challenges as far as getting interpreter services for the mandatory proceeding. So I will offer that. I concur with David as far as the his discussion, but want to have FMS be aware that there has to be some factor built into whatever may be created to recognize that we have different parts of the states that don't have the same access as the central part of the state.
Right, and Kim, very good point, and quite honestly, the decisions that are going to have to be made are going to have to be made with some very careful analysis, and we just didn't have enough time to get to that because we didn't know that the reduction was going to be at the level that it was. So we need a little bit of time to put together the numbers and provide this body recommendations. But at the outset, I think giving everybody notice that the budget is going to be reduced and courts need to be prepared to take a part of that $17 million shortfall. We need to make sure that word gets out. We will provide very specific recommendations, hopefully, that considers a lot of the variables that we will hear about.
So is your suggestion, David, the first step we do is consider the recommendations at page 62 and approve those recommendations and then move back to item 5?
Yes.
So I will make that motion. This is Kim Turner. I move the recommendations on page 62.
Bartleson seconds.
Moved and seconded at the recommendations. So we're going to first consider the recommendations of page 62. This is for action item 8, be approved as worded. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Any objection to those recommendations as stated? I'm deeming the recommendations at page 62, A and B of the Funding Methodology Subcommittee unanimously approved by TICBAC. So then that moves us back to item 5 and the conclusion based upon Oksana's presentation that we then adopt all the recommendations as set forth at page 50, 51, 52, 53, and page 54 in the attachments. Is there a motion? Any questions? I should open up for further discussion. David, any other clarification you need on that? Go ahead.
No. I was going to make a motion to approve those recommendations.
It's been moved that those recommendations be approved. Is there a second?
Mike Plante, second.
Yeah, I'll second with the caveat that the two categories will be redone, or the COVID-19 funding be recalculated, and obviously it's subject to what we do next week.
Okay, so that's a good clarification. Column U Union and A, column AC are going to be, the bottom line amount will remain the same, but the allocations within those columns will change based upon the action taken today and the actions to be taken. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Is there any opposition to the motion to approve as stated. Hearing none, motion carries unanimously. So that's all the recommendations set forth on page 50 through 54. So that is now concluded. Action item six, and pardon me, action item five and action item six. And I, folks, I know we're over time. We've just got at least one more action, two more action items. I think they'll be very brief. It's action item seven. Cottrell, you're back up. And folks, this is set forth at page 65. It's the children's waiting room recommendations, and the recommendations are at page 67. Cottrell?
Sure. Item 7 is the consideration of FPS's recommendations from its May 22nd meeting to further streamline the children's waiting room distribution and fund balance policy and review process, and ultimately eliminate the requirement for annual reporting by courts that have already received judicial counsel approved adjustments to their CWR fund balance caps. During TICVAC's November 21st, 2019 meeting, it was remarked that substantial effort goes into implementing the CWR policy, and it was expressed that it would be more beneficial to the courts, judicial counsel staff, and the various committees if the CWR policy was further streamlined so that it reflects the scope of the program today. The Fiscal Planning Subcommittee, having met and reviewed the current CWR policy, recommends that one, recommendations to the council on each court's CWR request come directly from the FPS or the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee. Two, that we remove the requirement for annual reporting by courts that receive a CWR cap adjustment. And three, that you direct Judicial Council Budget Services staff to revise forms that meet policy requirements based on actions taken by the Judicial Council when they meet to consider these recommendations.
Thanks so much. So essentially what this is doing is taking TICVAC out of the decision loop. It'll go right from FPS to the council on children's waiting room with the modifications of the policy. Any questions for Cottrell about this? Is there a motion?
I'd like to make a motion. I move approval of the three recommendations. This is Kim Turner.
Great. As set forth at page 67, there's a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Judge Kelly seconds.
Judge Kelly seconds. The recommendations at page 67, 1, 2, and 3. Any further discussion? Hearing none, any opposition to the recommendations as to action item 7 is set forth at page 67? Hearing no opposition, I'm going to deem the three recommendations unanimously approved for the children's waiting room. We're getting there, folks. One more action item. Brandy.
Yes.
You've been great so far, but now you're up. So this, folks, I'm now taking us to our last action item, which is item 8 at page 72 of your materials. It deals with minimum operating and emergency reserve policy. The ultimate recommendation is at page 74. Brandy?
Thank you. So this item, the minimum operating and emergency fund balance section of the fund balance policy, requires courts to maintain a fund balance or reserve of approximately 3 to 5% of their prior year general fund expenditures. This requirement has been suspended since 2012, with the most recent suspension expiring at the end of this fiscal year. To provide a quick background, in August of 2012, the council first suspended the minimum operating and emergency fund balance policy for 2 years due to the establishment of the 2% reserve in the trial court trust fund that began in fiscal year 2012-2013. And government code section 77203 put a 1% cap on fund balance that courts could carry over that went into effect on June 30th, 2014. Instead of eliminating the policy, the 2 fiscal year suspension was applied in recognition of efforts to either eliminate or increase the 1% cap. Since that time, the council has approved fiscal year suspensions on the policy every 2 years in order to provide additional time to repeal or increase the amount of that 1% cap. Recent efforts to amend Government Code Section 77203 have resulted in an increase to that 1% cap, and beginning June 30th of this year, trial courts may carry over unexpended funds in an amount not to exceed 3% of the court's operating budget from the prior fiscal year. As advocacy efforts For further changes, remain a discussion item with the administration. The recommendation for consideration is to extend the suspension for two more fiscal years until June 30th, 2022, or earlier if Government Code Section 77203 is amended. That concludes my report.
Any questions for Brandy on this issue?
This is Mike Planet. I move to approve the recommendations.
I second.
Moved and seconded, the recommendation set forth at page 74 be approved. Any opposition to the recommendation? Hearing none, the recommendation is unanimously approved at page 74. So that takes care of our action items. We're not done yet. Brandy, do we have any further action items that we've not taken, that we have not resolved today?
No, we do not.
So I'm just going to turn very briefly to Leah, the information item. The last information item for discussion is the ARP updates. Leah?
Yes. Hi, Judge. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. Terrific. So this is just a report back. The policy for adjustment requests is on page 81 of the materials. And formally, there is not a specific requirement for the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee to report back to TCVAC on these adjustment request proposals, but as a courtesy and just really to close the loop, we felt like it was important to come back to the committee and just put some closure on issues that had been previously referred to the committee. So that's the intent of the agenda items that are included. The first update is a report back on a recommendation that was made to for an adjustment request for courts that operate multiple locations. It was a request that was put forward by the El Dorado Superior Court. It was first reviewed in the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, and because some of the elements of the request had more to do with the workload side of the model, it was referred to the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee for review. That committee reviewed the request through the lens of the Resource Assessment Study Model, or RAS, and it also took a look at other policies in the Judicial Council that that dealt with locations, and so those were some policies that our facilities group have put together in terms of citing a new court location. So the committee looked at some of those policies to see if there maybe was a basis for making a recommendation to modify the workload formula to account for location. After the committee's review, the decision was that there were currently no specific leverage points in the model to make an adjustment based on multiple locations, and that the issue of operating multiple locations was really a local decision, and that there was no formulaic method in way the branch determine which, how many locations a court should operate, where those locations should be cited relative to population centers and the like. And so while the committee did recommend not to approve the request or make a change in the workload in the RAS formula to account for location, the discussion at the meeting suggests that as the Funding Methodology Subcommittee in particular continues to evolve the workload formula to account for new and evolving information. And I'm talking specifically about some of the discussions about the court clustering and the impact of the workload formula on particularly some of the smaller courts. It would not be remiss for the committee to continue to consider this issue of locations and geography. And so while it may not be formally on FMS's work plan as such, I think it will be an issue that will come back to the committee at some point in the future. The second item is a little less evolved. This is a recommendation that was made rather recently from the Superior Courts of Contra Costa and San Francisco, and it is regarding misdemeanor jury trials. This item has been referred to the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee, and staff to that committee are now working on some of the analysis that would look at jury trials as a workload factor that is accounted for in the workload models, in the resource assessment study model. And I imagine that the workload assessment advisory committee is now planning for a late summer meeting, as it typically meets in August or September timeframe, and this item will be put on that agenda for discussion. So those are my updates on these two matters. And again, they are informational only. There's no action to be taken, but simply to continue to inform TICBAC about the referrals that have been made to the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee.
Leah, thank you so much for that. Anybody have any questions of Leah on these items? Okay, thanks so much. So folks, I think that leaves just two more informational items that are just covered in your materials. We didn't have, and I want to make sure I'm right on this, Brandy, we didn't have any speakers on this info item number 4 related to cluster 2 findings and info item number 5, TCTF funds held on behalf of. I don't believe we have any speakers on this. Is that correct, Brandy?
Yes.
Okay. So, Brandy, have I left anything out before, by the look on everybody's faces, I think we need to adjourn pretty quickly. Not, it just looks
end.
Like, pardon me?
We're good on my end, Judge. Thank you.
Great. So, folks, I generally take some time here to thank Budget Services staff and those included in the entire branch administrative staff for their work. We've heard from many of those folks today, John and Zlatko and Brandy and Leah and Oksana and Cottrell and people that are listening in. Their work is invaluable to us. I was about to hold up my phone to show you the phone calls I've received just in the past day from those folks, but then I realized that we're on a open video call here and everybody would see those phone numbers, so that's probably not wise to do, but I assure you their work is almost 24 hours a day. And before I let you go, and I rarely do this, I want to acknowledge the work of this committee and FMS, FPS, everybody, the R&E. This is a tough time, and I got to tell you, I lost sleep over this meeting last night because I was I didn't know where we were going to go. And at the end of the day, we haven't made anybody happy. That's just the nature of the beast today. But I think we've done our best to be fair as we can to everybody, and to be true to the language of our existing policies and the intent of those who provide the funds that we need to conduct our business. And with that, unless there's anybody else that has anything for the good of the order, I've already approved, not that I wasn't paying attention, but Brandy already compiled and approved the agenda for our next Blue Jeans meeting. That's been approved, and I think it's even been posted. So that agenda's gone out. We still have a little bit of work to do, and that's for the final decision to allocate the 168 cut. We'll be busy at work on that. And Brandy, remind us of that date just so we all have it for the Blue Jeans meeting.
It's going to be June 18th at 4 p.m.
2 weeks from today at 4 p.m.
Mark, 1 week from today, Judge.
Oh, sorry. Even better. 1 week from today.
So, unfortunately, our IT staff was able to get the Blue Jeans set up in time for that, and I just wanted to throw a quick thank you out to them as well for helping us with Blue Jeans today.
I left them off. That was negligent of me. They've worked diligently to get us on today and next week, so thank you all for that.
Judge Conklin?
Yes.
Just 1 second. I just wanted to acknowledge you for your ability to manage this video meeting. I had no idea how this was going to turn out, and you have done an absolutely masterful job of keeping track of who needs to speak, keeping us on track, keeping the materials moving, and really, it's very impressive. So thank you for being a great leader on this.
Well, thanks very much. I truly appreciate that compliment, but I will tell you I was following the chat up above very carefully for my cues that were coming in from Rebecca, who I've, again, been negligent. Rebecca hates it when I do this, but she has been right there with us, folks, and she's really the one who's told me what to say. So it's all Rebecca and all of you. Thank
you
all so much.
That is
David.
True.
Take the compliment. It's deserved.
Yeah. I appreciate
that. Yes, exactly.
All right. Everybody enjoy whatever you need to enjoy. If you didn't have lunch today, to conclude the day, thank you all so much. We'll talk. We'll see each other in a week. And most
great.
Of all, stay
thank
healthy,
you.
Please. Be careful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.